Welcome to Richer Life Insights. Our goal is to help you drive more money, motivation, and meaning into your life. Today, we're having a conversation that is really near and dear to my heart. It's all about goal setting, maybe how we're doing it incorrectly, and how we can do it so we can achieve all of the goals that we want. And so I'm talking with Mark Murphy. Mark is the co-founder and CEO of Leadership IQ, which is a top-rated provider of leadership training. He's worked with Microsoft, IBM, MasterCard, and a whole lot of other companies. He's the author of 100 Percenters, and the most recent book that we're going to talk about is called Hard Goals. It's the Science of Extraordinary Achievement. And he talks about the secret to getting from where you are to where you want to be. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your insight with us.
Robert, thanks so much for having me.
And so this whole idea of setting goals, a lot of people have written about it, a lot of people have talked about it, and certainly I think for most people they're familiar with the SMART goal, that acronym for SMART goal. And in your book, you come right out and you say, you know what, SMART goals maybe aren't so smart. They might be a little dumb. And you come up with a whole different approach and based on a lot of research that you've done. So maybe you can talk about what's wrong with the way we set goals now? Why don't they work as well as you think they could for us?
Well, you point out that there really are a ton of books, ton of writing on goal setting, and yet, notwithstanding all the content that's out there, there's still people struggling to hit their goals, and not still people like there's a few, but like 85-95% of people are struggling to hit their goals. And when we started to really dissect what's going wrong here, one of the things we discovered was that a lot of the way we think, SMART goals being sort of an exemplar of that, the notion that our goals, the SMART acronym stands for specific, measurable, which those are fine, but achievable and realistic and then time limited, that it's really the achievable and realistic parts that start to hang us up. What we found is that goals aren't failing because people aim too high and then they fall just short of their goals. In fact, it's the exact opposite. People give up on their goals. They abandon their goals. People don't actually so much fail to achieve their goals as it is they abandon their goals, and they abandon it because they just don't care. They get bored. They're not emotionally connected to the goal. It doesn't excite them. And so they just abandon it. They walk away from it. And that's the real challenge. And that seems to be the major problem with the SMART goal methodology and others like it, is that they don't focus on getting us excited about the goal. You can pick a goal all day long, but if it's not seared into your brain, if you're not really excited and energized by it, then the goal is simply not going to achieve.
Well, that is really interesting. I think for a lot of people, myself included, when it comes to setting goals or even for the day, I love checklists, right? So I write down all these things that I want to do, and it gives me such great pleasure to check them off, to cross them off. And I think I bring that, and I think others bring that kind of mentality to setting goals. So they come up with all these goals that are very achievable and very realistic because they think it's going to be much easier to achieve them, of course. And so they'll feel this sense of accomplishment, and that sense of accomplishment will help them drive forward and go on to that next goal. But you're saying that doesn't happen, that the goals that we set are just so lame that we don't even care about them.
Exactly. And the thing about it is that the items there's a difference between to-do lists and goals. And the stuff that's on our to-do list, interestingly, actually has some urgency. If you say, if on the to-do list is go to the supermarket, well, you're not going to not go to the supermarket. I mean, you may delay it for an hour, but if you're out of milk, you're out of milk. There's a sense you have to go do that. If you're out of food, you're out of food. You have to go to the dry cleaners. You won't have anything to wear. But when we apply that same methodology to, like, I want to lose 10 pounds, Well, that's not the same thing. You're going to live fine tomorrow. It's not like not having clothes to wear. It's not like running out of milk for your coffee or whatever. Those are actually, there's urgency attached to them. But the issue with, a goal is we actually have to create the urgency. If we don't have enough money for retirement, if you're under 70 years old, 65 years old, there's always tomorrow. You've always got that out. And that's the problem, is that, we achieve to-do lists. You can have the checklist mentality, and that's great because so many of our things have a built-in urgency to them. But goal setting is not one of them. We actually have to create that urgency for ourselves, and that's why the achievability part is problematic, because it's we don't have the that person sitting over our shoulder, the spouse, the kids need to be picked up from school, whatever. There's nothing making us do it. It's optional. And yeah. So we need something else to make it.
Now that's an interesting distinction between basically your to-do list and goals, because you're right. With the to-do list, things are pretty urgent. You can put them off for a little bit, but not for very long. But when it comes to goals, and we're talking about really important life-changing kinds of goals, like you talked about, saving for retirement, losing weight, writing a book, etc., you can put those things off forever. And so how then does someone who wants to achieve a lot, who wants to have these hard goals, and for the listener or the reader, HARD is actually an acronym. We're going to get through it. It's not just a hard goal, meaning difficult. But how does the person bridge the gap between having a goal that's really, really difficult, yet inspiring at the same time? Because it's really difficult, make it inspiring, or would it have the opposite effect?
That's actually part of it. The when we think of the HARD acronym, it's heartfelt, animated, required, and then difficult. And one of the things we found is that when people get difficult goals, goals that are just outside of their comfort zone, it neurologically wakes them up. It's sort of the difference between, your drive in the morning commute where, most people are half asleep, they're driving to work, and they're in something of a trance state. They're just sort of zoning out, maybe, jamming to the music, whatever, but they're not really focused on the driving skills. But now you throw them in a rainstorm, throw them in a blizzard, and all of a sudden, they're wide awake. They are, music goes off, your pins and needles, your brain is absolutely alert. That's the state we find with hard goals. You don't want them to be impossible, but it does need to be, and generally it's about 20-30% more difficult than the goals you're doing right now. So it's just crosses outside of your comfort zone. You're going to have to pick up a few new skills along the way. You're going to have to stretch your current skill set to do this. But what it does is it wakes the brain up. Now you're alert. You're paying attention. You're on pins and needles. And it forces the mind to focus. And when the mind is awake, we're neurologically activated, that actually becomes more inspiring. It's like nobody wants to play the video game that, you solve in 2 seconds. When you look at games like, what's the popular one right now? For the iPhone crowd, Angry Birds. It's one of those things that it's just hard. You don't get it every time, and that it pushes you just outside. It teases you, the difficulty of it, and that's why there's however many tens of millions of people playing that thing. It's a similar kind of principle.
Okay, so with the goals we typically set, they're kind of boring, and as a result, our minds are not engaged, and we don't have that oomph when we get up in the morning to, really do the things we need to achieve them, because, again, kind of bored, we're in that trance state that you talked about. And so you're suggesting that the goals really be outside of our comfort zone. And so I'm wondering what the difference between having a difficult goal or, a hard goal that's not necessarily so easily achieved versus a dream or vision, or like we're going to land on the moon by the end of the decade, or, you know, I have a dream, those kinds of things. Is that what you're referring to, or something a little bit more specific than that?
It's generally, it's more specific, although the, you know, the we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of this decade, that was pretty specific. That was, you know, we have this threat. You know, we've got the Soviets sitting over there, and we've got the, you know, this existential threat sitting out there. We've got the urgency, and here's the deadline. You know, by the time 1970, the clock strikes 1970, we had better have a man on the moon. And the interesting thing about it was that it's, you know, at the time it was about a nine-year goal, when JFK uttered those words. And what's interesting is that the most people's goals are not going to be of the 8-year, 9-year variety. They're going to be, you know, 6 to 12 months typically. But the same mechanism is in place, and that is learning new skills. The thing we found is that it's not so much it just is it difficult or not, but the reason why difficult goals seem to work is they force us to learn. And getting a goal that's outside of our comfort zone forces us to hone our skills a little bit. We have to learn a few new tricks and techniques along the way, and that's the thing that wakes us up. Even though not everybody loved school, people do actually like to learn. They like to add to their skill set. They like to feel like they're better now than they were 6 months ago at whatever the thing is that they're talking about. But, you know, school aside, people like to learn. It stretches the brain, and that's the thing. When we, you know, think about the space program, what we had to learn to make that happen, it was a body of knowledge that actually has influenced every industry we have today, especially the high-tech industry. So, you know, the learning part of this is one of the essential keys.
And is there a fine line between setting a difficult goal and a very, very difficult, almost impossible kind of goal? Because I'm just thinking, if someone's listening and they have an idea for a book and they want to write the book, would it be wrong for them to set a goal that I want to not only just write a book, I want to get a top publisher, and I want it to hit the New York Times bestseller list? Is that too extreme, or is that the kind of goal that you're talking about?
Well, what's interesting is that part of that goal you control, and part of that goal you don't control. And what you control is writing a book. You can control writing a great book. What you can't control nearly as much, there are a lot of exogenous factors that come into play with, you know, I want to write a New York Times bestseller. You know, what bestseller lists you make is only partly dependent on you. It's also dependent on TV coverage. It's dependent on, you know, I remember doing getting bumped from a TV interview one time because the Elliot Spitzer scandal broke when he had just uncovered the thing with the prostitute. And you know what? You don't control that. That's going to mess up your day. And you know, that is completely outside of my control. I can control my book. I can control the research. What I cannot control is the outside world. So I always tell folks, and the research is pretty clear on this, focus the goals, make them difficult, but make sure that you still have some control, because the minute you have the excuse, well, I didn't get it because, you know, the governor of New York decides to go cheat on his wife, it sets in a sense of learned helplessness. It says to you, you don't have total control over the world. And one of the great benefits you get from a goal is a greater sense of control. Like, I set this goal, I aspired to it, I worked my rear end off, and here now I actually achieved this and I feel extraordinary. But the minute some exogenous factor can come in and mess you up, it starts to decrease the good feeling, the sense of accomplishment, and it increases that sense that I don't have much control. I'm actually kind of helpless here.
And so that's a great, great point. And so I think what you're saying is that any goal that you set, while it can be very difficult, it really needs to be something that you can control. So write that book. That's a great goal. But having other kinds of goals associated with that that are beyond your control, like every author's dream used to be and goal used to be, get on the Oprah show. And while that's an impossibility now, that was their number one goal. I mean, talking to many authors, that's what they wanted to do. And so there were many, many pieces of that that the author could control, but there were many others that were simply far beyond their control. So you would say probably not a good goal.
Exactly. And the other side of it is that some of it, not only can you fail for reasons outside of your control, but you could succeed for reasons outside of your control. And what ends up happening, it's like winning the lottery. You don't have any, the folks who win the lottery are not psychologically better off than the rest of the population. In fact, most of the research shows they're significantly worse off. And it's a sentiment that, you know, you have this found success. The greatest fulfillment comes from doing something, achieving it, and owning it. You know that it wasn't luck. It was your effort made this thing happen. Your direction, your attention, everything else. But when you accomplish something and it's luck, there's still a little splinter in the back of your brain that says, I don't even know how I made this happen. Why did Oprah call me? I have no idea. And, you know, and that's it's an unsettling feeling that folks get.
And so let's talk about what a hard goal is, H-A-R-D. Can you run through that acronym for us?
Sure. It's the H stands for heartfelt. And what that basically means is we have to have an emotional connection to our goal. It sounds easy enough to do, just care about the goal, but it turns out that this is one of the trickier elements of this because people don't often know, they set a goal, but they don't really know if they care about it and why they care about it. We did a fascinating study where we took this group of managers in a corporation and we were trying to teach them the concept. So we had the idea, let's do something not work-related, let's do it something more personal. So we talked about setting a personal financial goal. And so we asked these folks to think about money and draw a picture. Draw a picture of how you currently feel about money. And, you know, everybody drew these pictures where it's like they were carrying a rock on their head or on their back. They felt frazzled. They were drawing their, you know, just how, you know, in a normal non-artist adult would draw, you know, sort of drawing crazy hair and frazzled and everything else. And then we asked them, draw yourself, think about what it would be like. And if all of a sudden you had $500,000 after tax in your bank account. You know, so we picked a number that wasn't like lottery crazy, but was just enough that it would buy financial security for folks in this income bracket. And so we then asked them, well, now draw a picture of what your life is like, what this means for you, having $500,000 in the bank, $500,000. And it was interesting. The pictures they drew were not about sitting around counting cash. The pictures they drew were of themselves having more time with their kids, were on their bike going for a ride in the mountains. It was, sitting on a small little sailboat. It was spending time with the grandkids. It was all of this other personal stuff. And what was fascinating about this is that here you have people who, you know, generally they'll tell you, why do you need the money? Well, I need it for retirement. And you know, I need the sense that I have the money in the bank. And it's all about that number. It's just the number. It's numerical. It's the money. And yet, it turns out that the reason why they cared about the money had nothing to do with the number per se. It had to do with time with the kids, time with the grandkids, time with their spouse, time on the boat, time doing whatever. It was about time. It was about emotional connection. And that's the thing that a lot of people just don't realize what their goal is really actually about. Half the time it's not about what we think it's about. And it's that emotional connection that really drives that.
And so how would someone then with a financial goal, someone who's listening saying, you know, I really want $500,000 in the bank. And so what would that specific goal be? Would it be that number, simply I want $500,000 in the bank, and then they think about what that would mean to them and that's what makes it heartfelt? Or is the goal itself somehow related to what the money can provide?
It's interesting. Great question, because it's they still want to focus on the money, but the thing that is going to make them adhere to that goal is the heartfelt connection. The thing that, you know, most people know what they have to say. They have some sense that, and, you know, I mean, heck, even if you pick the number that's more than we have now, the problem for a lot of folks isn't the dollar amount per se. It's the choices that they, the things they have to give up. Well, I don't really want to give up, you know, I want to drive the, I don't know, whatever, the Jaguar. And, but I, you know, if I drove the Ford, I could take that, you know, whatever the difference is and put that into the bank and make that my savings. But I don't want to give this up. And so we're staring at the Jaguar, which is interestingly the second part of the hard goals is animated. It's creating that picture. And what happens is we look at this and you're staring at a Jaguar or Mercedes, whatever indulgence you have, and then you're staring at this number, this $500,000, let's say. Well, there is no way that a number is ever going to look as sexy as a picture of some shiny new car, or even worse, an actual shiny new car sitting in front of you. That the shiny new car is going to win out every single time. But when you're comparing the shiny new car to not just a number, but a number plus a picture of your kids, a number plus the picture of your grandkids, a number of that vacation spot or that beach you went to on your honeymoon with a little rusty sailboat, whatever, now all of a sudden there's less of a visual imbalance. And what happens is the picture of what that money means to you is almost as clear, it may be even clearer than what that car looks like standing in front of you. This is why, for example, you know, when somebody's at a restaurant, let's say they're trying to lose 20 pounds, and the chocolate cake comes by on the dessert tray. I mean, it's the genius of why restaurants started creating the dessert tray in the first place. They know you can't turn it down. If you had to read a description of a chocolate brownie, eh, yeah, you can turn that down. But when you actually see that thing warm sitting in front of you, oh my goodness, that's hard to turn down. But if all of a sudden you pulled out a picture of those skinny jeans that you've been hoping to get into, you pull out a picture. I got a letter from a woman who actually carried a bikini in her purse, like a bathing suit. And whenever she was out to dinner and she'd get the dessert tray, then she would literally just look into, she wouldn't pull it out of the table, but she'd look in her purse and she'd look at that bikini, and all of a sudden it became a lot easier to turn down that chocolate cake or the brownie or whatever, because now she has a competing visual. And our visual sense, there was a study in a neurological clinical magazine and in a journal, and what they did is they gave these wine experts, folks who are, you know, supposed to be able to tell the difference between whites and reds and, you know, a Zinfandel and a Pinot Grigio and everything else. And what they did is they took white wine and they put red food coloring in it. And then they asked them to describe the wine. Interestingly, fascinatingly, what ended up happening is these guys all described the wine with the characteristics of red wine. Their mouths knew that the wine was white, but their eyes knew that the wine was red. And your eyes are going to win virtually every single time. And that's why, you know, drawing the picture, I'm not one of those folks, and nor is there any real research to suggest that just by magically drawing the picture, you know, everything in the world will happen to you. That if you draw a picture of $1 million, it poof, magically going to happen. It's not that. It's really that if you've picked a goal that is just outside of your comfort zone, which means it's in the realm of the possible. You can do this. It's just going to take a lot of effort and discipline and work and everything else. And you want to make sure that you don't give up on the goal. Well, that's when you start to draw a picture. You figure out why you have an emotional attachment to it. That gives you the heartfelt connection. Then you visualize it. And now you could put 100 shiny new Mercedes in front of you. And it's not going to win against that $500,000, because $500,000 is not a number in a bank account. $500,000 is 6 months of the year living down the street from your grandkids. It's, 12 months of the year being home at 5 o'clock every night to pick your kids up from school, or whatever it is that, you know, really drives and motivates you. It's life. It's much more vivid than just a number in a bank.
So Mark, this is really, really great stuff. I'm very, very impressed with everything that I'm hearing here, because it makes a lot of sense to me. And in my first book, I wrote briefly about what I call the dream board. There, it's called many different things, but it's this idea of, you know, coming up with your goals. You can write them down, sure, that's fine. But it's the significance of the dream board is that you have pictures associated with all of your goals. And because the thinking is that when you see something like you've talked about, it's much more of a visceral experience than simply reading about it. And so do you recommend that kind of approach as well, where you find pictures and you associate them with your goals?
Absolutely. And it's funny, I was giving a speech to about 1,000 salespeople, and it was just, I'm speaking on a Friday morning, and the Thursday night, the night before, they had announced, it was one of those organizations where if you hit the number, you get to go on the trip to like the Cayman Islands or whatever. And so they had just announced the night before, it was 200 some odd people had made the trip, had sold enough that they got to go on the trip. And the trip that year was, I believe it was the Cayman Islands. And so I asked them, I'm doing the speech, and I asked for a show of hands. I said, let me talk to the 200 folks who made it on the trip. And I want to ask you a question. How many of you, when the trip was announced last year, because at the beginning of the year, they tell you what the number is you have to hit and then where the destination is. So it's, you got a year to think about it. And I said, how many of you had a picture of the Cayman Islands sitting in your cubicle? And of the roughly 200 people, about 170, 180 hands went up, something like that. Then I turned to the other 800 people and I said, let me ask you the same question. How many of you had pictures of Cayman Islands hanging up in your cubicle? And it was interesting because about 50-ish hands went up. So 50 out of 800 versus 180 out of 200. And that's really right there, a pretty stark contrast that when you put the picture up, it generates, as you say, that visceral attachment to the goal that, listen, there's going to be a lot of days you do not want to make that extra sales call. You don't want to make one more cold call. But when you're staring at the picture of the Cayman Islands, you're like, you know what? That's why I'm making the extra call. All of a sudden, you're a lot more motivated to go make that extra call.
You bet you are, and that's a great example. And so the acronym HARD, we've talked about the heartfelt piece, and the animated piece is really what we've just talked about, and that is creating some sort of a visual picture associated with it. And so the R is for required. Now, what do you mean by required?
Basically, we need urgency. We need to have a reason why this thing is important. And, you know, it's interesting that there are a lot of goals that sound good, but they seem too big. They seem too abstract. Like, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll start it next month. You know, well, I can't start the diet until the holidays are over. I mean, pretty soon we'll have July 4th. And, you know, I mean, the hot dogs and burgers and fireworks, that adds 20 pounds right there. I can't start it until August. And, you know, so we push off these goals and it becomes, you know, a major impediment to achieving them. One of the techniques we found works really, really well is to take this goal. Let's say it's 12 months from now. It's a year from now. It's going to take you a year to achieve this thing. Is we call it the cutting in half technique. So you take this and you'd say, all right, if I'm going to lose 20 pounds by the end of this next year, or I'm going to run a marathon. So I got to run 26.2 miles in a year. Well, what do I need to have accomplished by the end of the next 6 months in order to still be on track to achieve my goals? Well, I probably need to be running 13 miles by the end of 6 months, maybe even 10 miles by the end of 6 months in order to be on track to achieve my goals. All right, well, now I got that number. Now cut that in half again. What do I need to have achieved at the end of the next 3 months in order to be on track to hit 10 months, to hit 10 miles at the end of 6 months and 26 miles at the end of 12 months? Well, maybe I need to have run 5 miles by the end of the next 3 months. Okay, great. Now cut that down to the next 30 days. What do I need to have done at the next 30 days? Well, I should probably be running 2 miles by the end of the next 30 days in order to be on track for 5 miles at the end of the next 3 months, to be at 10 miles at the end of the next 6 months and 26 miles at the end of the next 12 months. And then the big question is, all right, given all of that, I need to be running 2 miles continuously by the end of the next 30 days. What's one thing I can do today to help me stay on track and achieve this goal? It is, turns out, it's that one thing question that really gets people on track. The difference between the people who are the major achievers and the people who just fall by the wayside is not 30 different things that they do in a day. It's one thing. The high achievers are achieving one thing. They're doing one thing today. Maybe it's you go for a walk. Maybe it's you lace up the sneakers and run to the end of the block. Who knows what that thing is going to be, but if you can find one thing that you do today that's going to keep you on track for the next 30 days, which keeps you on track for the next 3 months, which keeps you on track for the next 6 months, which keeps you on track to hit that goal at the end of 12 months, that is the critical element we're looking for. It's just find the one thing that is going to help you achieve your goal. And unfortunately, if you total up your total to-do list, most of the time, totaling up your to-do list does not equal a goal, because a to-do list is usually the result of other people's goals. Most of the stuff on our to-do list was put there by somebody other than us. Get milk. Well, that was put there by your refrigerator. Finish the expense report. Well, that was put there by your boss. We need something, one thing that we do today that we originated that concept. We're doing this because it's our idea. And if we do that one thing a day, that is the major difference.
And it's you're so right. It's all about pushing that goal one step further. I'm a big fan of David Allen's Getting Things Done. And yep. His big question is, you can have these fantastic goals and all these things that you want to do, but he brings it down, like what you're saying, is what is that next step I need to take? And it's always asking yourself, what is the next thing I can do to push one step closer? And so I'm wondering how, in your example of, let's say, the marathon or someone who's losing weight, would you suggest that they have multiple goals? So they have the end goal. I want to run 26 miles. Then would they also have the 6 month goal and the 3 month goal and the 2 month and the month and the week goal? Do you actually write it all out? What are the mechanics that you would recommend?
Yes, it's a good idea to write it all out, and because it basically, it's a cascading goal. It basically rolls up into the larger goal. So you want to be able to visualize the chain, and it helps you connect today to a year from now. This way it doesn't seem like such an abstract concept. You see how doing something as simple as running one block today turns into 26 miles in 12 months. And writing it down. And the other big thing too that I always tell folks is, listen, don't think that you don't come back and revisit this. A goal is not you write it down once and never think about it again. It's a constant, dynamic, living thing. You have to be constantly reinforcing why this goal is important to you. And if you want to, you know, you want to run that marathon, well, you know what? Buy a running magazine. Look at those pictures. Look at the people who've done it. Keep it reinforced. Don't just, you know, you get that emotional high one time and say, woohoo, I'm going to go run it, and then never think about it again. You want to be constantly re-energizing that goal, infusing it with new energy, because that's really what it's going to take. Because it's, yeah, fine, it's easy enough to go for a run now. It's going to be a little harder to go for a run in the middle of January. And that's the thing. You don't want that energy to dissipate between now and then.
And so if you have that one goal, I want to run the marathon, you really have maybe 200 mini goals that lead up to that goal. And so is that how you would structure it?
Yes. And the question of what do I need to do today? The best way to do it, we found, is actually answer that question every day. Don't write out the next 200 days, but rather, you know, you'll have written out what the year is and what the 6 months are. And then when you finish the first 6 months and, you know, your first 30 days and 90 days and all that, you'll do it again. So every 30 days, you'll be resetting those 30-day goals. And every time you chunk off a 3-month goal, you'll be resetting another 3-month goal. But the daily goal, you want to do that every day and do that first thing in the morning, so that you're basically asking yourself every single day, what's the one thing I need to do today to make this a great day? What's the one thing that I need to do today in order to stay on track for my goal? And the really fascinating thing, and this is probably as good a benefit as anything else is that, you know, if you've ever had that experience of driving home, you know, from work at the end of the day, and you're like, you know, I know I ran around all day and I broke a sweat and, you know, I'm exhausted, but did I actually accomplish anything today? And we've all had, you know, our fair share of those days. The interesting thing is, if you begin your day by setting that one thing, by defining what's the one thing I need to do today to stay on track for my goals, no matter how the rest of the day goes, you have that to fall back on to say, you know what? I actually did accomplish something today. And it gives those folks, they have higher daily satisfaction than the people who don't go through that little exercise. And it's really just that one thing. The rest of their day may have been every bit as hectic and frantic and scattered as everybody else's. But because they have that one significant accomplishment, that one meaningful thing to fall back on, they don't feel like the other people do. They don't feel quite so frazzled. They go to bed at night with a real sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely key. I think one of the other things is that for many of us, we go through our days feeling a bit sort of helpless and out of control, where everything is dictated by somebody else. We get up at a certain time because we have to be at work at a certain time. And when we're at work, our boss tells us what we have to do, and we have certain responsibilities, and then we have to leave work at a particular time to pick up the kids, and then we have to make dinner, and it's all these external things on what we have to do in a day. And I've written about this before, once you have a goal, once you have maybe a side project or venture, all of a sudden that is something that you now have control over. And it's not somebody else, it comes from within. And once you start making some progress on that one thing a day, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I know it was a really crappy day because I all this and that, and the client said this and my boss said that, but you know what? I'm driving my life forward because I've got a little piece of my own thing here that I'm working on. And that has been huge for so many people. And so I'm wondering, for the goals in this, what is the one thing I need to do? Do you ask, what is the one thing I need to do today? Or what is the one thing I need to do for this goal and for that goal and for that goal and for each of your goals?
Generally speaking, you can ask, well, you can really do it either way. What we find is that most people have usually one or two really big goals, the ones that are really consuming the bulk of their attention. And it really comes down to the goals that you need the extra push to do. You know, if your goal was to have, you know, do something fun, for example, yeah, you know, we don't need much of a push to do that. But when it's that big goal? What's the goal that we struggle with? What's the goal that we're most in danger of abandoning? That's usually there's one or two of those. You know, most people are not running a marathon, quitting smoking, losing weight, and fretting about retirement all simultaneously. There's usually one or two of those things that are driving folks' consciousness.
Well, you haven't met my friends.
So that's what we recommend.
Yeah. Just kidding. No, you're right. Right. There's usually one or two big ones.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and once you get into the groove, you know, some goals become more self-sustaining. You know, if it's not your first marathon, if, you know, if you're just a runner and you're somebody who runs every day, well, then you probably don't need this as your goal. You're not at risk of, you know, my wife loves to run. And so for her, a marathon was enjoyable. For me, it was force of will. She didn't need a goal to run the marathon. She did it because every time she goes for a run, she finds it enjoyable. Me, it's hard work and painful. So it's, I need the goal. She doesn't.
And that completely makes sense. Now I'm wondering what would be the first step in, you know, someone's who's listening to this and it's like, yeah, you know, I the goals that I have now, I can see are maybe not difficult enough, or they're not, I haven't animated them. So what would be that first step someone should think about doing in order to create hard goals?
The first thing is take one of the goals that means something to you that you want to do but you've been struggling a bit with, and you, A, make it 20% more difficult than it currently is. That is going to instantly wake your brain up. And then the second thing is try and visualize it. What is this going to look like? Try and bring the visual senses into this, because if it's just a number on a sheet of paper, that's usually not enough. We want to take it a level beyond that. So you want to add that visual component in. And then third, and once you've got those two pieces in place, you've made it a bit harder, you've asked yourself, what does this actually look like? You've visualized it, and in doing that, you'll actually take care of a lot of the heartfelt stuff as well. Then you can ask yourself as sort of the final step, okay, what's something I can do today to start pushing this thing forward? What's the one step I could take right now that is going to move the ball forward a bit? And once you have that, go do it. Wake up tomorrow, ask the same question, and those are really the sort of the 1, 2, 3 of how do you get started with this. Take an existing goal, make it more difficult, that wakes up the brain, visualize it, animate it, bring that thing to life in your brain, and then from there, figure out how you're going to operationalize it with one thing, and that's usually the key right there.
And can you tell people a little bit about your company, Leadership IQ? Is that for bigger organizations, or is it also for individuals?
It's for both. We obviously have a lot of large corporate clients, but Leadership IQ is, we're fundamentally a research company and a training company. We try and go out and study what is working and not working, so we're a very data-driven organization. But then we try and disseminate that knowledge in a myriad of ways. So sometimes we disseminate that with big consulting engagements and executive development. But other times we disseminate it in webinars that individuals sit on, and videos and books and things like that. So when you're on our website, there's, you know, price points ranging from $100-some-odd up to the, you know, big corporation, we don't post it on the website because it's too big kind of thing. So, you know, it runs the gamut. But that's, we really just wanted to disseminate information. There's, you know, I've gotten personally frustrated over the years with some bad science, bad thinking on this stuff, and seeing things like SMART goals, you know, live for 60 years and nobody questions it. And so we try and take tough questions, add some data to it, and then figure out what to teach from there.
Yeah, and why don't you talk just briefly about the research that went into this? It's not like you're a guy in your apartment and you've had some idea of, oh, HARD, well, that would be a good acronym. Let's see what we can create there. You did a tremendous amount of research into neuroscience, psychology, and other fields to come up with this theory that you have. And so maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, the whole thing actually began where we do a lot of employee survey research. And so we were staring at one particular data set. Was over 100,000 employees were involved in this. And it all began on the corporate side because we're looking at these goals and we were looking at some employee survey data about the extent to which employees feel energized by the goals the company has set for that year. And there were disturbing numbers. We found in the early research we did that we found that 34% of employees said that they could even articulate what the organization's goals were. And then we took a sample of those folks and said, well, all right, 34% of you say that you can articulate the organization's goals. Go ahead and do it. And out of the people who said they could articulate the goals, only half of them got it right. So, you know, this was one of our studies that we released to, you know, the business world was, okay, about 17% of your employees have any ideas what your goals are. That's a major problem. But then as we looked at that, we said, you know, I wonder if this is limited just to the business world or wouldn't the same things apply when we start talking about personal goals? Like, is it really the problems that corporate goals have, do they really have different problems than if we're trying to lose weight or save money or whatever? And so then we started launching studies to go take a look at non-business goals, you know, the retirement and the weight loss and quitting smoking and running the marathon and what have you. And we found that the same issues obtained over and over again. And so we did another separate study where we took 5,000 people and we looked at people who were setting SMART goals and what was happening and why weren't they achieving. And we took another 6,000 people and started to ask them with regard to difficult goals and what did that do to them and how much more successful were they. And so we took each of these pieces, let alone when we started to bring in the neurologists and the psychologists and say, okay, well, show us what's happening with the latest fMRI data, for example, and show us, you know, neurologically, is there a difference here? What happens in the brain when people start visualizing and seeing a picture as opposed to just seeing words? And, you know, that's where we get into some of the findings about, you know, the extent to which people, you know, if they see words and then they're asked 72 hours later to remember them, they remember about 10%. If they see a picture and 72 hours later, they're asked to recall it, they remember about 65% of it, the pictorial superiority effect. And, you know, when we started to add in all the neurological stuff and the economics and everything else, we found that it all tracked with what we had initially seen in the corporate world. You know, people are people, and whether you're trying to get people bought into achieving a big corporate goal or you're trying to get your spouse bought into running a marathon with you, turns out the mental processes we go through are pretty much the same.
And not only the mental processes, I would imagine, but also some of the challenges as well. And so the book, again, is called Hard Goals. And you also wrote before this book something called 100 Percenters. Now, what's that about?
100 Percenters, it was actually the book where we first sort of teased out the concept of hard goals. 100 Percenters is a management book. The subtitle of it is Challenge Your People to Give It Their All and They'll Give You Even More. And it's a leadership style that basically says, listen, the most effective leaders, the ones that employees like the best and perform the best for, are the ones that help you grow, they challenge you, they recognize that you have untapped potential, and they're going to push you to achieve that untapped potential, but then you're also going to feel great and celebrate your accomplishments when you do. It's sort of the leadership approach that if you wanted to lead an organization to achieve hard goals, it's basically the management style you'd want to adopt.
Got it. And so for personal goals, then the book, Hard Goals, I would highly, highly recommend it. I've done a tremendous amount of research and reading into personal development, goal setting, and this is a fantastic resource. You can learn a lot more about the book, Hard Goals, about Mark, about his company. You can go to leadershipiq.com. And if there's one thing you want to leave with the listeners, if you know they forget everything else we've talked about over this last hour, is there that one thing that you just really wouldn't want them to forget?
Yeah, the big issue is writing a goal on a sheet of paper is great, but if you don't care about it, you're not going to achieve it. So the question we all have to ask is, why do I want to do this? And that's the thing. When you figure out the answer to that, you can draw that picture. You can make it more difficult. You can find the one thing to start doing today. But it's ultimately, goals are not about how many tactics you can throw at it and how many sticky notes you can put on your fridge, but rather, do you care? And it's worth 15 minutes, 20 minutes of sitting down and really thinking about the goal. Don't just pick a number because your friend down the street did it. Pick the number that's going to work for you. Pick the goal that means something in your life.
So make it very personal, make it heartfelt, and again, make it difficult. I think that was the key sort of lesson for me, is make it more difficult than what your current goals are, because that inspires you. So Mark, thank you so much for coming on here. This was really fantastic. Lots of great information. Again, the book is called Hard Goals. You can read about it at leadershipiq.com. Thank you, Mark.
Robert, thanks so much.